So guys, this passage is Proverbs 10 verse 9. You can have a look on your devices if you have it. It's literally two lines. Very short proverb. And it says, whoever walks with integrity walks securely. But whoever takes crooked paths will be found out. Short but deep. It's full of meaning. The passage says what it means, and it means actually what it says. If you do what is right, you don't need to worry. You don't need to look over your shoulder. You will live safely. But if you do not follow this rule, your sin will find you out. And the implication is that you will face the consequences of that. Your misdeeds will never profit you. Picture this. A man was convicted of a brutal murder 30 years ago. Thought he'd got away with it. A single hair, single strand of hair was found under the ring of the victim. The DNA matched. There was a little bit more evidence as well, and he was convicted 30 years after the event. You may think you've got away with it, but your past misdeeds will catch up with you. So the Proverbs is a book of wisdom, and this passage here is a warning to us. My view, it should be written in neon lights. And at the very least, we as Christians should have that embedded here in our hearts. Integrity means doing the right thing. Your word is your bond. You say something, you follow through with it. It's about sincerity. It's about authenticity, honesty. It's about being principled. And ultimately, it's about having a good character. What are the payoffs of integrity? And why does God want us to have integrity? Well, the payoff is that we get to walk life without fearing. We're secure. And who doesn't want that in their life? Why does God want us to have integrity? As I was researching this, I realized that God wants us to stop playing games with our internal selves. He wants us to have integrity so that we can begin to face up to our internal selves, what's going on inside us. Proverbs 4:23 says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything that you do flows from it. He wants us to have integrity so we can begin to guard our hearts. Godly integrity speaks to our motives, you see. Gives us good reason to do the things that we do. God's integrity will do so much more than that. It moves us. It provokes us. Integrity actually influences us, encourages us, inspires us, it boosts us, but it will also restrain us. It will also check us. It will also remind us to be right before God. I think it's a bit like a superpower. I have to be honest, integrity. If we get this stuff right, if we really understand what this is all about, I think it can change us. It gives us every reason to be who we claim to be and who God says we are. That's what integrity does. It gives us the reason to be who He created us to be, actually. Full disclosure again. Many of you will know, not all of you, but I'm a counselor in private practice. So I deal a lot with people's integrity. They come and there are issues, and at the bottom of it, sometimes there's integrity issues. I'm a couples counselor as well, and often there are integrity issues there. There is an epidemic in society today, actually, where people can't find security. A lot of people feel insecure in themselves. The fact is, the world doesn't show you how to be secure. TikTok school does not teach you how to be secure. Nobody shows you, but the book shows you, the Bible shows you. People are constantly seeking the approval of man in order to get security. People pleasing, seeking external validation. Now, these are some of the games that we play internally. Living in integrity means that we realize that no one can serve two masters. We either live to please Christ, or we live to please the world. Being in integrity with yourself, it stops you playing those kinds of games where we displace God or we exchange God for people. It's what I call having internal integrity with ourselves. These are the very things that they create significant changes in the way we see ourselves. If we get this right, we begin to see ourselves differently. These are the things that give us what I call godly self-esteem. These are the things that give us back our security. We get a confidence that is derived from God. When we do this thing, which is we get to know about integrity and we get to act on it, it is the beginning of something. It's the beginning of an improved character. What would motivate us to do it? I ask myself, why would we do it? Well, personally, I don't want to be living around the edges of life, worrying about what will happen if I can't keep this person happy, worrying that somebody doesn't like me, worrying that they don't approve of me, worrying that they didn't smile at me, they didn't invite me. That's what happens, you see, when we don't have that internal check-in with ourselves about, who am I looking to? Why do I want their approval? If we're looking for love, and if we're looking for belonging, and if we're looking for acceptance and approval, well, the only person that can give us that is God. If we can internalize this stuff, really take it in, then I think there is every chance that we can transform ourselves. Romans 12, verse 2. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind. I think this stuff is transformational. We're going to move on now to lack of integrity. What happens when we don't have integrity? Well, lack of integrity impacts how other people see us, especially if we are confessed Christians. If we lack integrity, if our lifestyle isn't matching our words, then actually what we're doing is damaging the faith. You know, we appear to be hypocritical to the outside world. It's not a good look for the kingdom. The other thing is that lack of integrity opens the door to lying. We become liars, you know, and often we're lying to ourselves. And we can engage in all kinds of lies. We can approve behavior that shouldn't be approved of. We can convince ourselves very easily that it's okay and look the other way. This is when we play fast and loose with ourselves and with our God. Selective hearing, selective blindness, resistance to seeing things, understanding things. That's what separates us from God. And the consequences are dangerous. I mean, recently, we've seen the spectacular fall from grace of some of our politicians. And boy, do they fall. Trouble seems to follow some people if they don't have integrity. You must have noticed it yourself. Constantly in court cases, disclosure after disclosure. Have you noticed? It's one thing after another. And in the process, you can see the loss of peace, you can see the shame, you can see the reversal of fortunes, you can see people's lives destroyed, reputation destroyed. You can see people becoming a shadow of themselves. And for me, this stuff is humbling. It's really humbling to see this in the news and in our headlines. What we do behind closed doors when no one is watching is seen by God. And ultimately, your sin will be found out. Integrity is lifelong work. It's not something that you get all of a sudden. It's something that you work on for the rest of your life. I want to tell you a story about Dennis, my husband. Several years ago, Dennis was out of a job. He worked as a contractor most of his life, so he'd have contracts that lasted for 2 years, maybe 3 years, maybe a year, and then there'd be a gap, and then he'd find his next contract. So he was in that gap period. The agent called him after some considerable time, actually, of looking for work, and said, "Dennis, your CV has been put forward to an organization. They really like you. You're exactly what they're looking for. Dennis, there are no other candidates. It's just you. In fact, they like you so much. What they'd like you to do is just go and meet them, just to see who you are. It's not really much of an interview. Pretty much the job is yours." After the phone call, Dennis put the phone down and he looked sad and I said, "What's going on?" And he said, "I can't take the job." I said, "Why not?" He said, "It's working for a tobacco company and it goes against everything I believe in." I remember asking him a few questions and he looked at me and he said, "Linda," he said, "smoking kills and I'm not going to be working for that industry." You see, this was integrity. He said, "It goes against everything I believe in. I can't work for them." The agency could not believe it. They thought he was mad. The man said, "Why? Why? The job is yours. What's wrong with you?" He thought pretty much that Dennis was mad. And I watched this unfold. It had an impact on me. And when we spoke about it more recently, he didn't really remember the words that he used to me when he said, "I can't do this." He said, "Linda, smoking kills." But I remember it. Why did I remember it? It's because it impacted me. You see, the thing is, when we observe integrity in other people, it impacts us. We quite like it when people stand up for what they believe in. And we love to see it in others. He didn't get the job, but he said yesterday, he said, "I felt lighter. I felt okay in myself, you know. I was true to myself and I was true to God." This is workplace integrity. Our culture promotes taking the path of least resistance. But actually, integrity isn't that. It requires something of us. There's a cost to it. Being prepared to stand up for something, that's a cost. Being emotionally uncomfortable, that is a cost. letting go of something. Maybe it's a job, but maybe it's somebody's approval of you. There's a cost there. Exercising courage. There's a cost. Having the courage to stand up for your convictions, trusting God is a cost. Learning to wait on God, there's a cost too. So it isn't the path of least resistance, but it is growth. Two things, in my view, will test your integrity. One of them is money. The other thing that will test your integrity is access to sex. These are the things we tend to hide. We tend to compartmentalize a secret sex life, secret thought life, secret fantasy life. What we do with our bodies is actually God's business. He designed sex. It's part of his creation. He also placed limits around our sexual behavior for good reasons too, just as there are limits around other behaviors. Sex scandals, in my mind, are integrity scandals. That's what they are. It's a question of integrity. The person at the heart of it, he hasn't really faced up, or she hasn't faced up to the part of themselves that is capable of cheating, capable of lying, living a double life. They haven't looked at that part of themselves. It's easy not to. But the consequences of this are immense disorder and emotional turmoil. The moral here is be careful what you allow yourself not to see in yourself. Be careful what you allow yourself to get away with, or turn a blind eye to, or to romanticize. Be careful. It's not romantic, actually. It's deceitful. And this will lead us to sin. Think. Pray. Walk away from it. Believe better for yourselves. Speak better over yourselves. Proverbs 12:15 says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man listens to counsel." We all face temptation. We all do. But people who have godly integrity, they know what they believe. They're secure because they have things in their lives that are just non-negotiable. They have red lines, things they will not do. King David in the Bible, he was an adulterer and he was a murderer. Yet the Lord called him man after my own heart. When Nathan the prophet told him that he had displeased God following his adultery, he fell on his face and he begged God for forgiveness. You see, that's integrity after the event. You should read it. It's in 2 Samuel 11. If we don't have integrity to look at our sin, if we can't even look at it, we cannot open our hearts up to God. And integrity is a matter of the heart. God works with our hearts. And that game, when you can't look at yourself and look at your sin, we call that game avoidance. Separate myself from my sin at all cost and admit nothing. Do you know, it isn't lost on me that the Proverbs, what we've been looking at here, the majority of them were written by Solomon. Solomon was the son of King David, and he's known as one of the wisest men in history. I wonder whether Solomon, who knew about his family's circumstances, the shadowy side of the union between his mum and dad. I wonder whether he observed his father's wisdom, because David was a wise man. But I also wonder whether he observed his father's lapses in wisdom. So when he became king, Solomon, and God said, "What do you want from me?" Solomon said, "Give me wisdom." God can use anything, anything at all in our past, in ourselves, our lapses of integrity, our family's failure, our adversity, our sin. He can use it all and turn it around for our good. Let me take the son of a king who was a murderer and an adulterer, but also a great warrior, and make him the wisest person known to man. I want to end with one final example. I don't know how we're doing for time. Are we okay? We went on a retreat. I'm part of the leadership team here, and we went on a retreat a couple of months ago. The treasurer, David, he gave us some figures, some statistics, and he said, looking at the accounts, it looks like six people in the church, a church of 300 people, six people give more than, I think it was a third of the total income of this church. Now, the fact is, these people weren't rich. They're not rich people. They're not millionaires. They're not super rich at all, very modest incomes. And of us in the leadership team, we were not necessarily, not all of us at least, among the six. And the room just fell silent as we, the leaders, pondered about ourselves. In the silence, we were processing, what does it mean to be leaders of this church? We were looking at our own integrity, our own financial integrity, actually. Why hadn't I increased my standing order? I suddenly started thinking. As a leader, I have to walk the walk as well as talk the talk. I can't stand here before you and say give if I'm not giving to the best of which I can give, the most that I can give. I can't just pay lip service to it. It's his money, you see, and we can't outgive him. And it was right that the treasurer brought it up to our attention, because you see, what he was doing was speaking out of integrity. When we fall out of integrity, we have to correct our steps. And of course, all of us as leaders have increased our standing orders because we want to do the right thing. We need, as leaders, to do the right thing. We need to talk the talk. We need to walk the walk. My question to you is, what are your red lines? Do you think about these things? What are your values? Do you have values? Thank you.